The Burning Bridge by Powell William Anderson. Usually, there are two reasons why something is done. The reason why it needs to be done, and quite separate, the reason people want to do it. The foul-up starts when the reason for wanting is satisfied, and the need remains. The message was an electronic shout, the most powerful and tightly beamed short-wave transmission which men could generate, directed with all the precision which mathematics and engineering could offer. Nevertheless, that pencil must scrawl broadly over the sky, and for a long time, merely hoping to write on its target. For when distances are measured in light weeks, the smallest errors grow monstrous. As it happened, the attempt was successful. Communications officer Anastas Merdikian had assembled his receiver after acceleration ceased, a big thing surrounding the flagship Ranger like a spiderweb trapping a fly, and had kept it hopefully tuned over a wide band. The radio beam swept through, ghostly faint from dispersion, wavelength doubled by Doppler effect, ragged with cosmic noise. An elaborate system of filters and amplifiers could make it no more than barely intelligible. But that was enough. Merdikian burst onto the bridge. He was young, and the months had not yet devoured the glory of his first deep space voyage. "Sir," he yelled, "a message! I just played back the recorder! From Earth!" Fleet Captain Joshua Coffin started. That movement, in weightlessness, spun him off the deck. He stopped himself with a practiced hand, stiffened, and rapped back, "If you haven't yet learned regulations, a week of solitary confinement may give you a chance to study them."
But sir," the other man retreated. His uniform made a loose rainbow splash across metal and plastic.
Coffin alone, of all the fleet's company, held to the black garments of a space service long extinct.
"But, sir," said Merdikian. His voice seemed to have fallen off a high cliff. "Word from Earth!"
"Only the duty officer may enter the bridge without permission," Coffin reminded him. "If you had anything urgent to tell, there is an intercom."
"I thought," choked Merdikian.
He paused, then came to the free-fall equivalent of attention. Anger glittered in his eyes.
"Sorry, sir."
Coffin hung quiet a while, looking at the dark young man in the brilliant clothes. "Forget it," he said to himself. "Times are another. You went once to E. Eridani, and almost 90 years had passed when you returned. Earth was like a foreign planet. This is as good as spacemen get to be nowadays. Careless, superstitious, jabbering among each other in language I don't understand. Thank God there are any recruits at all, and hope he will let there continue to be a few for what remains of your life." The duty officer, Halmier, was tall and blond and born in Lancashire, but he watched over the other two with Asian eyes. No one spoke, though Merdikian breathed heavily. Stars filled the bow viewport, crowding a huge night. Coffin sighed.
"Very well," he said. "I'll let it pass this time."
After all, he reflected, a message from Earth was an event. Radio had indeed gone between Sol and Alpha Centauri, but that was with very special equipment. To pinpoint a handful of ships, moving at half the speed of light, and to do it so well that the comparatively small receiver Merdikian had erected would pick up the beam, yes, the boy had some excuse for gladness.
"What was the signal?" Coffin inquired.
He expected it would only be routine, a test, so that engineers a lifetime hence could ask the returning fleet whether their transmission had registered. If there were any engineers by then, on an Earth sinking into poverty and mysticism. Instead, Merdikian blurted,
"Old Svoboda is dead. The new Psychologist Commissioner is Thomas, Thompson. That part didn't record clearly."